This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, August 4th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. You may have heard that America's bridges and tunnels get poor grades from the country's civil engineers. But internet access is also failing many Americans. The $1 trillion infrastructure bill moving through the Senate looks to address that by allocating $65 billion to improve internet access for poor and isolated communities. If approved, the funding could be a game changer for communities that have struggled with slow or no internet access. And for broadband providers, it could be a windfall, helping them add customers and reach new areas. On today's show, Wall Street Journal reporter Drew Fitzgerald, who tracks the internet's chaotic growth throughout the world, joins us to discuss the plan and its potential impact. That's after these headlines. Activision Blizzard says the president of its Blizzard Entertainment unit is stepping down after being named in a gender bias lawsuit filed against the video game company last month. J. Allen Brack oversaw the unit behind hit gaming franchises like World of Warcraft and Overwatch. He's being replaced by two company veterans, Jen O'Neill and Mike Ibarra, who will co-lead the unit. Last month, California filed a lawsuit accusing Activision of paying female employees less than their male counterparts, providing fewer opportunities for women to advance, and ignoring complaints about harassment and discrimination. In a statement, Activision said it became clear to Brack and the company that Blizzard Entertainment needs a new direction and leadership. Brack didn't immediately respond to a request for comment, though in a statement on Blizzard's website, he said he's confident in his replacement's ability to lead the company and realize its full potential. Meanwhile, Chinese gaming giant Tencent said it's implementing stricter rules on younger users after a state-owned newspaper sharply criticized online gaming, calling it opium for the mind. The state-owned Economic Information Daily ran a feature saying excessive gaming could have negative effects on children and highlighting experts' calls for tighter regulation. Shares of Tencent and other gaming rivals fell on Tuesday as investors worried the industry could be swept up in a broader regulatory crackdown in China. Tencent said it would limit young gamers to an hour of playtime on weekdays and 2 hours on weekends and holidays, tougher limits than what's required by authorities. And back in April, in a closely watched vote, Amazon warehouse workers in Alabama rejected a plan to unionize. After the vote, the Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union accused Amazon of intimidating workers during the election period, which Amazon denies. Now an official from the National Labor Relations Board is recommending nullifying the results of that vote. If the recommendation is upheld, it could lead to a new vote on unionization. Amazon said it'll appeal the recommendation. All right, coming up, lawmakers want to expand broadband access in the U.S. Will the plan mean lightning-fast internet for everyone? We'll get into the details after the break.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
When experts talk about spending money to improve the nation's infrastructure, they often highlight the impact it'll have on the economy. That's just as true for the internet as it is for fixing highways and roads. A recent study published by the Aspen Economic Strategy Group found that the lack of universal high-speed internet during the pandemic resulted in a 3% drop in labor productivity, which implies a 2% decline in economic output. A separate study out of the University of Maryland finds cheaper access to internet in low-income neighborhoods makes people more likely to be employed. Lawmakers are hoping to address some of this through a $1 trillion infrastructure proposal now being considered in the Senate. Joining us to discuss what's in this plan and how it'll affect companies and customers is our reporter, Drew Fitzgerald. Hey, Drew.
Hi.
The Senate version of this bill allocates $65 billion to broadband infrastructure. That's a lot of money, but it's also a really big problem that they're looking to address. How would these funds be allocated?
Well, the lion's share, about $40 billion, would go to grants that states can use to expand internet access. The states would be paying operators, these are cable and telephone companies, to build a lot of this stuff. In the past, the federal government has spent billions of dollars on contests to award money to companies that are expanding broadband service. But the problem with that system has been flawed maps that really leave a lot of residents behind. So this new framework is going to put the states in charge of a lot of this money, not all of it, and see if that yields a better result.
How are the big home internet providers like AT&T and Comcast reacting to this plan?
Well, today these companies are mostly quiet, but in private, there's a bit of a sense of relief that a lot of the things in this bill that internet providers like the least haven't survived into the latest version. AT&T and Comcast and Charter, big companies like these, have already said that they're going to spend billions of dollars bringing their service to millions of new households. But in the words of AT&T CEO John Stankey, any additional government funding would just be icing on the cake. That would allow them to reach even more places. It's also important to note that there are billions of dollars to extend the emergency broadband benefit, which Congress enacted earlier this year, to provide internet to people who can't afford it, especially during the pandemic. It's not just for the extremely poor, and that could benefit cable and telephone companies in the future if they're able to upsell service to people whose circumstances might have changed or might just be willing to spend more on a higher speed connection.
Let's talk about speed for a second, because that's another problem for many Americans. Does this bill address that?
It does. There are really two key speeds that are set by this bill. The first is the speed that determines whether you have high-speed internet in a certain location in the first place. And the bill is clear that money is only going to go to areas that aren't already served by broadband. In this case, any area that doesn't already have download speeds of 25 megabits per second and uploads of about 3 megabits per second. Now, that's not very fast in today's day and age. The second speed is what these companies receiving grants have to provide once they get the dollars. And that's 100 megabits per second and uploads of at least 20 megabits per second. Now, that's, again, not the fastest bandwidth that modern internet providers offer, but it is a significant improvement over the standards that the federal government has set in the past.
You know, most of us are familiar with a few internet providers in the country. Is anything being done to increase competition?
The thresholds that this bill sets allow for a lot of different providers to come in and compete for grants that they can use to expand service. But the way the legislation is written, it doesn't really provide a strong incentive for cable or wireless companies to come in and try to compete with companies that are already offering basic broadband service. So if you're a Comcast or a Charter Communications, you don't have a lot to fear in the neighborhoods that you're already serving from new competition backed by federal dollars.
It sounds like the internet providers are the big winners in this plan. Are there any provisions they are likely to be unhappy with?
There are certainly some parts of the legislation as it stands now that internet providers are not going to like. There are requirements about transparency that make them plainly state how much they're going to charge for service and the speeds that they're going to offer. And there are also provisions that withhold money from companies that have outages that last too long. Internet providers hate disclosing publicly how long their outages last and when their networks fail. There's also what's called a digital redlining provision that is going to force companies to make sure that they're not passing over neighborhoods that historically have been disadvantaged. These are largely minority neighborhoods. But again, the devil's going to be in the details because it's going to fall to the federal government to enforce those rules.
This is just the Senate version, and we know that bills can change a lot as they make their way to a final vote. Have telecoms indicated how they might like to influence a final version?
Telecom companies aren't saying much publicly about what they think about this legislation as it stands today. But as I understand it, there's not going to be much that big cable and telephone companies want to change about the Senate version of the bill, and they're mostly counting on the fact that more aggressive measures in House legislation won't make it into the final infrastructure law.
All right, let's take a step back. Big picture, what does this say about the politics of broadband?
It says a lot. Politicians used to debate whether high-speed broadband service was a necessity. Now it's not really up for debate. Since the pandemic hit, it's become clear that any area where people can't access broadband or can't afford it is going to be left behind in the 21st century. Workers can't do their jobs, students can't study, resources like healthcare are becoming harder to access for people who don't have a good connection. So the conversation has really shifted from whether the government should bring internet service to a debate over how much to spend on it and, of course, how best to allocate those dollars. If this were a decade earlier, we might not have seen Republicans open with an offer of around $65 billion for broadband service. Democrats wanted about twice as much, and we've ended up at this number. What I think that shows is that politicians on both sides of the aisle now agree that broadband service is something that the government should spend money to provide to everyone in the country, just like water, electricity, roads, and bridges.
All right, that's our reporter, Drew Fitzgerald. Drew, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's all for today's Tech News Briefing. You can always find more tech stories on our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please rate and review it. You can do that wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.